before, just in answers, analyze the cost of housing out in Building Brooklyn Park.
Welcome to the meeting of the Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee. And we do have quorum. And we are going to begin with Senate File 550, which has been laid over and is the vehicle for our conference committee. Our, not our conference committee, but our energy policy bill.
Today we're ready.
So there is a, I think there, is it in the file? So I want to thank the committee for the hard work that you've done this session, and we've heard and supported a number of policy initiatives in the past couple of months that will continue to move our state forward in reaching our renewable energy standards, our conservation goals, our greenhouse gas emission reduction goals. We have incorporated a number of those initiatives into this energy policy omnibus bill that is now before you. And as I said, we laid it on the table on Tuesday, and at this time, Senator Dahl moves that we remove it from the table. And add this A4 amendment. Any A5. Sorry, it's the A5 amendment. So on Senator Dahl's motion that the A5 amendment be adopted, any discussion at this time? I think that what we'll do is walk through the language of the bill. And I'm going to have Senate Counsel walk us through the language of the bill. This language includes all the bills that were either recommended by the Energy Committee for inclusion in the omnibus bill, or they passed out of our committee and were sent directly to the floor. Now, there are just a few places where we were uncertain about language, and we will talk about that as we approach it. So, Mr. Fuller, do you want to walk us through the bill?
Sure, members. My understanding is we go all the way through the bill. I point out where we change things, but we come back at the end and then discuss that. Is that your wish?
Yes, sir.
Okay, members. I'll tell you for each one what Senate file was part of, who the author, and a brief discussion of what it does. Section 1 and Section 2 were both in Senate file, are in Senate file 573, Senator Kevin Dahl. The bill is on the floor. They are PUC initiatives having to do with record keeping of proceedings at the commission. And they are as they appeared in the bill on the floor, no changes. Section 3 is Senate file 1461, Senator Rosen. No changes in this. This is the bill that requires reporting by delivered fuel vendors who are of a size of above 150,000. Turning to page 2, section 4, Senate file 586, Senator Olsen. It's a PUC initiative. It's on the floor. And this has to do with the PUC's authority to suspend rates during a rate hearing to accommodate the clogged calendar they now have, and this was negotiated out. No change in language there from what's on the floor. Section 5 on line 3.27 is Senator Dibble, 1347. There is a change to that section. It has to do with incentives for plans for energy conservation improvements. It's part of the rate-setting structure with the PUC. So we'll come back to that and have a more thorough discussion. Some language has been dropped. Nothing has been added. So check off Section 5. We have to come back and talk about that. Section 6, again, is Senator Olsen's 586. That was just a grammatical correction on line 4.20. It's a PUC initiative. It's as it was in the committee. Section 7 has a new language, extensive new language. This is the Senate file 1214, Senator Prettner-Solon. So we'll come back and discuss that one. That was the ability for the utility to do some innovative things in the central corridor and get regulatory approval for that. Section 8 is Senator Dibble, Senate File 1330. That's on page 7, top of the page, line 1. This has to do with cost recovery for utilities, renewable facilities. We're talking about public utilities. We're talking about PUC activities here. And this simply included a subset of activity that was omitted by some statutory references. It doesn't really expand everything, just makes clear that all these renewable things, whether or not they go through a particular regulatory process, are eligible for the cost recovery. The language is the same. Section 9 is at 8.7, renewable and high energy efficiency rate options. That was Senate File 1330, again, Senator Dibble. This is the green pricing program that allows a differential rate to be charged to ratepayers if they specify they want to get renewable energy. It was scheduled for sunset. The repealer at the end of the bill repeals that sunset. And this looks the same. This is unchanged from the way it was approved in committee. Section 10. Senator Dibble, Senate File 1346. You'll see the change is on 9.26 to 2.8. That's the way it was in committee. It allows for a 1% carve-out in the RAS for XL for wind of the 25% they were required to do by wind. They now may do an absolute 1% of that with solar. That's unchanged. Section 11, Senator Kevin Dahl. It's a PUC initiative. That appears on 9.29. That is on the floor. It's unchanged. And it's simply, this was a negotiated agreement. There was a lot of time spent on that. The details were worked out. It's unchanged from how it was worked out in this committee. And it expands the ability of the commission on its own motion, its own ability to issue refunds, puts a 6-year statute of limitations on it. Section 12 is a combination. There was two bills. There's a bill by Senator John Dahl and Prettner-Solon, 736 for Senator John Dahl and 550 for Senator Prettner-Solon. They both dealt with SIP savings. And this bill, if you look on lines 1021 to 1024, you see that it blends those two concepts. The thought was that with the stimulus money and maybe some low-hanging fruit that utilities may theoretically be able to exceed 1.5, if all they could do would be get credit for 1.5, that would be a disincentive, and so we're letting them bank the savings for a period of years. That's unchanged. Section 13, Senate File 1347, Senator Dibble. And this is in the SIP program, qualifying solar energy projects. And it clarifies or specifies the incentive that's available. It enriches the ability or enlarges the incentive opportunities for utilities to do solar, at least the potential for that. Section 14, which is at 12.12, is Senator Kevin Dahl, Senate File 670. It's unchanged. It's part of that Architecture 2030, Minnesota 2030, it just asks that when utilities are providing design assistance to plans, they include strategic tree planting as part of that design planning assistance. Section 15 is at 14.17. We're now in that section 216B.2411 is an adjunct to the SIP program. It lets some generation projects participate in SIP revenue spending. And this is Senator John Dahl, Senate File 1335, and the current authorization for SIP spending is limited to 5% of your obligation, and this provision would expand that opportunity to go up to 10% of your SIP revenue spending requirement. Section 16, Senate File 1430, Senator Pappas. This again is part of that generation aspect, spending for generation under SIP, and it expands the sort of structures on which solar can be placed. It was small businesses and residences. Now it's, if you see on page 16.9, it can be commercial or publicly owned buildings. So it enlarges those sorts of structures on which these qualifying solar projects under the SIP generation authorization may be installed. Section 17. This is Senator Tomasoni, Senate File 1675. It traces itself back to the Prairie Island legislation, the biomass mandate. As you recall, there is new language on this. The new language is much less directive. The bill, it was, as we heard it, provided that the utilities had to do something and the commission had to approve it. Now it's the new language, which is in the bill. You'll find it at, and we can discuss it more later, perhaps. But it says they should negotiate, and the commissioner can look at it and may approve the resulting product. So it's much less directive, and you'll find that on 17.27. But since that's new, we said we'd talk about that later. So check that off. If you have questions, Section 18 and 19. Senate File 1214, you'll see that on 18.5 and 18.34. Yes, Senate File 1213. And that's a certificate of need law amendment that there was two subdivisions that both applied to the requirements for renewable projects to get, whether or not they had to get a certificate need, and so we combined the two together. There was some conflict, and this was a Department of Commerce Office of Energy Security initiative. Section 21 is Senator Kevin Dahl, Senate File 573, which was on the floor, and you'll find that 19.32. And that just repealed some obsolete references on 20.20. I'm sorry, Section 20, Senate File 526, Senator Pretner Solon. This is it's much like the greenhouse gas report that was passed last year, where very sort of a light obligation for the administration to come in and say what they're doing. This is the case with this as well, because the committee has heard from over the years many times that transmission is a significant issue in doing a number of things with generation. And so this basically says, and it's the same as it was, you don't have to go out and do some heavy research, just what you know now, what you're bringing into the hearings, bring it to us, let us know what you think with respect to transmission needs, problems, and any legislation that might be advisable to deal with those problems. So Section 21 we talked about, it's on the floor. Section 22, again, is a combination of the Senator John Dahl Bretner Solon bills on SIP 550 and 736, 736 being Senator John Dahl. And it's a LEC study. As you recall, the Legislative Energy Commission is a new venture. And there's a number of studies in here that are of a somewhat practical nature that the thought is the commission can sink its teeth into it and have legislation. There are programs we have now. It's things that are really within the bailiwick of the legislature. And so hopefully it'll get the commission going on things that they really have a lot of knowledge about. So this is one of those. And that language is unchanged. Section 23 is Senator Pretner Solon. Appliance study, it's on the floor. Again, it's the LEC and very general direction to them to basically look at the issue and see what makes sense for Minnesota. Section 24, Senator Dibble, Senate File 1347, was amended on in committee. It's gas utility concern about their ability to meet SIP goals and whether or not they can use a long-term plan to do that and get it approved. So it gives authority, but does not mandate the commissioner to approve. I'm doing well. Jumping back to 24, just seeing if you're awake. Section 24 is Senate File 1771. As you recall, we had a couple of committee hearings on low carbon fuel study. And again, this tees that issue up at the LEC to look at it from a Minnesota perspective and see what makes sense and come back with any recommendations. That was Senator Pretner Solon. Section 26, Senator Kevin Dahl, Senate File 841. This is the issue of the disclosure to prospective buyers and tenants of the energy profile use of what they're either going to buy or move into. And there's a lot of activity around the country on this, and it takes a coordinated approach. There's real estate interest. There's a number of stakeholders. So it seemed advisable to look at the issue from all perspectives and get input from all the stakeholders. Recall we amended in committee to put in residential builders, I recall. Section 27. Section 27 is a proposal to look, the Public Utilities Commission, look at this issue of cost recovery and rate case. There is a concern that a lot of rate recovery is gained outside of a general rate case when you have the whole company financial profile before you. And there are arguments on both sides of whether or not to allow that. And so this is going to look at the study and see where the public interest lies with respect to that issue. Section 28 is a revisor's instruction. It was part of Senate File 573 and is necessary because of the terminology change. Section 29 is a repealer. That was part of the green pricing provision earlier on. The law was scheduled to sunset. That's the sunset's being repealed, and then early on we amended some of the details of the bill. So, Madam Chair and members, I don't know if I identified all three. So, Section 5, Section 17, and Section 7, I believe, are the three that appear before you today in this document differently than when you last voted for it. So that's the summary.
And before we move on and take those three sections, is there any discussion or any question about what has been included thus far in what is our committee omnibus bill? Senator Olsen.
Madam Chair, on Section 3, after our long committee meeting, I had a long conversation with a local vendor, and on the survey, he brought up that, you know, the LIHEAP people, they know a lot of this information they have. You know, they know who they're sending the checks to and all this kind of stuff, and I thought he had some pretty legitimate points. I don't want to beat this thing to death, but he was trying to make the point with me that a lot of that information they already have and have access to it. And he did have a concern that they can use that money. He said the biggest thing we could do to improve that program is that they don't be able to get rebates at the end of the year, that would go towards filling their tanks again or something like that, but not that they would get cash back if they have a balance. That's all I got.
So do you have some suggestions, Senator Olsen?
Well, I think we kind of hashed it out pretty good the other day, but except to maybe strike some of those things, and I don't know where you would stop and end, so I don't.
Okay. You can always bring this into conference committee to work it out. Senator Rosen, do you have any comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Olsen. From what I understand on Tuesday's testimony, and your concern was the small mom and pop. And if you remember, the amendment on this was for any vendor who receives over $150,000 in LIHEAP dollars. And I truly don't think that there's anything in here that's onerous to the vendor to disclose on how those federal grant dollars to seniors, disables, and families, small, young families that need the help, how they're spending the dollars, if it's truly going for heating or if it's going to have to test the tank over again or for a Saturday delivery charge. I mean, that's what we're trying to get at is, and there are a lot more dollars going to be coming into the state from the federal side in this program. So the study, I feel, is a compromise from the original bill, the first bill, which was, a total on the delivered fuels that we debated for over an hour. So, the vendors will say, the delivery fuel vendors will say, well, they did the study 2 years ago, but there were some things in the study that were not reported or asked in the manner that would give the information that this report would give.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olsen.
Senator Rosen, I would be happy to work with you on if there's some way, I don't know if federally we could, but find a way to that those rebate dollars or those dollars do not go to the homeowners, that it would go towards purchasing more fuel or an account for the next year or something like that, because that seems to me a pretty legitimate concern that they can get cash for this if there's some money left in their account at the end of the year. And I guess you seem to make it seem like this was a bigger company, you're correct, and they do have a number of them that do get cash back. And that just doesn't seem right to me. So,
okay, we'll take that under advisement. Thank you. Any other questions or comments at this time?
Madam
Chair. Senator Sanjum.
And this is one I probably should have talked to Senator Rosen before on. Would Senator Rosen yield? I don't know if we need to go that direction or not, but Senator Rosen, on the Section 3, a person here has brought to my attention the privacy aspects of that and whether or not this then becomes public data. And while granted it doesn't list names and addresses, it does, for instance, if I had an oil company and Senator Rosen had an oil company and she wanted to buy me, in that kind of a situation, there's a fair amount of business data here that's available, at least from the standpoint of the condition of your business. And it just seems to me, I think in fairness to just overall business, that there ought to be some level of privacy to some of this data. And have we thought about that at all? I mean, I think we discussed that as we talked about this issue a couple days ago. And I think it's a fair thing to talk about.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Sinjum, if you look on lines 1.22, the following information goes to the OES, Office of Energy Security. Mm-hmm. Doesn't go anywhere else. But and if you could point out to me what proprietary information here that bothers you or bothers the some of the people out in the audience here, then I would I think there's some information here that's probably missing that was in testimony on the first bill, delivering with delivered fuels, about you know, the setup fee, and I'm just trying to remember. I wish I had brought my file. But you could tell me if there's
Madam Chair, and maybe to
Senator
consult,
Senator Senchum.
Would this be, this is public information if it's not otherwise classified as private, right? So these files and these reports are available to me or anybody else. So then, I don't know, to the question, Senator Rosen.
Just yes. To note that Senate counsel is indicating that is true.
Okay. To the question, if you're in a competitive situation in business, knowing the number of customers, maybe any one of these has a little value. Collectively, they may have more value in terms of assessing a business from the standpoint of, business competes with business.
Senator,
there's some level of, I think, public disclosure here, which may be helpful.
Senator Senchum, would you be willing to let us bring this to the conference committee?
Well, sure. I think it just needs to be kind of thought about.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
I think it's fair.
Yes.
If there's a problem with same-day delivery fee as far as what, if that's competition, I mean, that should be information that's available to the consumer. I think probably the only one that should cause any angst is the per-gallon price for fuel for each of the heating season months. Maybe that's the only one that I could see where that would cause any problems. But otherwise, I mean, the number of customers on Keep Fill, I don't think that's an issue, number two, or the number of customers currently behind on their bills. I mean, these are federal grant dollars, and I do think there should be some accountability with those dollars.
But Senator Rosen, you'd be willing to work on this
ensure
that
Chair,
privacy data is maintained.
She does make a point about them being federal dollars, and maybe there is a level of them expectation for more, this would be more public. I don't know. I think it's a reasonable thing to talk about.
Okay. Madam Chair, that's fine. I'll certainly talk about it in the conference committee.
Or maybe you can work with people before we get there.
Huh? Well, if they would be willing to work with me, that would be fine, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you. Madam Chair, and Senator Rosen, in developing this list, did you work with OES or with another group on developing? What I'm wondering is this list of information going to be helpful or useful to OES and or not? I mean, is there need to be an expanded list? As far as coming up with this criteria, is it something that you worked with the folks who brought this idea forward, or did OES work with you on it?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dahl. I did not necessarily work with OES on it. I worked with the people that serve the LIHEAP, that are LIHEAP customers. I worked with the people that are working with LIHEAP customers to find out if those dollars are truly being used in the way they should be used. And I think that's what we're trying to go after.
And Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, though this is going to go through OES, they're going to create the form. It's going to be reported to them, and then they're going to compile that information, or they're just going to turn it over to the LIHEAP folks. How is it going to be? How do you envision that it's supposed to actually be used, and who's going to do that compiling of the data?
Senator Rosen,
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, OES has a lot of this information already at their hands, and it is accessible to them right now. So, the groups that work with LIHEAP customers do have access to this information.
Madam Chair,
Senator
Rosen, that's kind of what I was trying to get to, is if they already have this information, and we could just go to OES and ask them to compile this information, do we need to duplicate those efforts?
Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair and Senator Dahl. They don't have all this information, and I think what we were trying to get at from the study that was sent out, or the survey that was sent out 2 years ago, it was inadequate as far as, are there people that are going without heat during the winter? We want to know who is going up without heat. We want to say, okay, heat, does that mean delivery fuel, or does that mean they went out and bought an electric heater or their heating was something different. So we want to find out, are the dollars being served where they're supposed to be served, the LIHEAP dollars? Are we getting the best bang for our buck on this? And I think the Office of Energy and Security is a perfect place to handle this information and acquire it and figure out where those dollars are going.
Okay. Senator Jungpar.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Rosen, I guess as I'm looking through this, and then I'm putting on my private business owner hat, and I'm saying, you know what, if I got to report this stuff and if it's open to the public, I don't want to serve these people. Why do I want to waste my time telling everybody what I'm doing and letting everybody know about my business? You know, this is the only place that a private company under these kind of circumstances has their money at risk, and then I got to do more and more reporting. I think this ought not to be public documentation, and I quite honestly, as a business owner, would say, I don't need that kind of stuff. It just doesn't, you know, it's one thing if it's a federal program and it's federal people doing it. It's another thing if it's a public utility and it's a federal program. But now you're heaping stuff on private individuals that are just trying to run a business.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Jungbauer, these are federal dollars. And some of these vendors are making a lot of money off of federal dollars, up to over $1 million a year on LIHEAP. So I don't think this is asking too much about where are these dollars going. That's what we're trying to find out. And how are they being served? That is the premise. Now, if they don't want to serve LIHEAP, well, LIHEAP customers, that's fine. This is a lot better than having a cold weather rule on them. And that's I'm trying to protect some people that are vulnerable. And I think trying to figure out where those federal dollars are going and how they're being used is not that onerous on the vendor.
Senator Jungbauer.
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, they're not making one penny more under this federal program than they're making under private individuals that are writing them out a check. So it doesn't affect their profit margin. And again, it's a higher risk, especially the way the program is and some of the testimony. So there is more at risk with less reward, more paperwork. So it costs them more to deal with this because of the paperwork. It's no different than all the mandates at a public school from federal funds that come down. And our schools come in every year and say, with all the new paperwork and stuff, we make less and less money actually gets to go where we need it to go because of all the goofy mandates. So I just look at this as one more goofy mandate.
Senator Jungbauer, the logic is, though, that these are dollars they wouldn't receive if it weren't for the LIHEAP dollars. So that could be a $1 million chunk out of their business.
So, well, there's no logic to that. They have their business from people that pay, and this is a risky client if they don't have the money. So you're asking them to put their money at risk first, then get paid on a program, and they don't get paid anymore. So there's no incentive to either wait for the money or help people that are on the program and fill out more paperwork. So in point of fact, they make less percentage of profit under this program than on anything else they would do that's the same thing within the public sector.
Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair and Senator Jungbauer, there is the risk when you add in the crisis dollars is very, very little when you're dealing with LIHEAP. It's a guaranteed sale. Now, we could, and I won't do this in the first, you know, in respect to the chair, but let's go through each one of these requirements and say what is wrong with this requirement when you're getting federal dollars and pretty substantial dollars, asking where are they going, how is it being used. And I'm a business owner also, and if you're going to receive federal dollars someplace, I think there is some measure of accountability that needs to be asked. And I don't think this report is that egregious. I just don't see it. So we're going to differ on that, and I am willing to go to the conference committee, Senator Jungbauer, and talk about each and every one of these requirements and have a full debate on it, and probably should have had it during the committee because I had my notes in front of me. I didn't know I was going to be there was issues outside the door here, but I still don't see that. We are trying to do something for people that are vulnerable, and I don't think report is that bad.
Senator Jungbar.
And Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, I think the point being made on the report is the rest of the public doesn't need to know it for number one. So if you want to make it something that the federal government has and it has certain privacy protections under it, fine. The report is not necessarily onerous, but it is one more thing for the same exact profit margin, meaning a business owner makes less money to serve this client because it's more work than they make with a regular client.
Thank you. Let's walk through the three sections where there were changes, and that would be starting on page 4, line 4.13, section 5. Mr. Fuller, you can perhaps tell us what we've done here.
Well, it's what you don't see. I'm not sure if we did we bring the copies of the language? Because that was in Senate file 1347. And it had the notion that we want to incent certain activities by ensuring that it was, I think it was the most profitable resource choice or option. And that language has been dropped. There were questions raised about, and the tension, I suppose, is between over-recovering and under-incenting.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Dipple,
we actually had developed different language than was being passed out, but continued to draw some level of concern from various parties. And so at this point, I'm not going to offer any amendment that kind of streamlines the language that's being passed out. I'm not sure why we're passing it out.
I think we're passing it out just to show you what was eliminated. And as you look at Senate File 1347, what was removed was the language on 2.9 through 2.13.
Right. But Madam Chair, I do continue to believe that the idea of recognizing the effort that utilities go to create efficiency and conservation in our overall system in lieu of creating new forms of energy that are potentially more expensive or more impactful in terms of our environmental goals, we should figure out a way to recognize that so that we don't continue to provide an automatic disincentive for that effort. It's a difficult concept because we're not building new energy, we're saving energy, yet there's still effort being expended. But instead of utilities making money from that effort, they lose money. So I'd like to at least be able to keep that conversation going, not today, but at some point in the future.
And I can appreciate that, Senator Dipple. I think the question is, how do you incentivize the utility and still not put an onerous burden on the ratepayer? So,
and that's the magic, Madam Chair.
Yes, and that's the part that needs to be worked out, and that will be brought into the conference committee for discussion.
Madam Chair, if we don't resolve that, or even if we do resolve maybe this question this year, I do think maybe at some point in the future, as I was thinking about it today, I thought I've really never taken the time with the committee to really give with the advocates and the utilities and others to really give a thorough briefing on these ideas of decoupling and disincentives and that sort of thing. So maybe we could have a study session on that subject, because it's a couple of what seem to be contrasting concepts that we put together, and it's difficult.
But he didn't.
And it kind of wrapped in the whole how we make rates.
Thank you.
And Senator Dipple, we did get a report on decoupling from the PUC, so maybe we could combine those two and have a hearing in the near future.
That's an excellent idea, because I know the PUC has done a lot of work in conjunction with an independent consultant, one of the best in the country. So that would be excellent.
Okay. Okay, so that's pointing out that one section and the change that occurred there. the next section is on the whole section 7 is a new section that we had discussions about, and this was regarding the innovation on on the light rail transit corridor that's going through Minneapolis and St. Paul that Xcel has some plans for, some very, very exciting things. But there also was language regarding cost recovery in this that was of concern, and we've had some discussions about this, but we haven't come to a true meeting of the minds yet. And so language is in the bill, but I would like to move to strike on page 6, lines 6.26 through 6.31, section D, or D. And I'm wondering if Senator Dahl, or if you would move to strike section D.
I'll so move the sections that you named.
And what this does basically is there are a number of places in the bill that allow for cost recovery through SIP and the renewable energy legislation. But this would allow for additional cost recovery in areas that are not covered by that in moving infrastructure. I say that wrong? 6.26? Yeah, 6.26 through 6.31. Everybody understand?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
And I think this still needs to continue to be worked out. Senator Dibble.
Well, I was going to ask if you're going to continue, because I think cost recovery is a good thing. I think the question was, is it going to be narrowly construed on a geographic basis or not? So I think
one of the changes in this particular bill is it did narrow down the territory, so it was not a large metro area, which extended a mile on either side of the corridor. It now has been reduced to a quarter mile on each side of the corridor. So that is true. Difference is the cost recovery goes across the entire district of service territory of the utility.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. I'd really like to see these projects move forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a large-scale solar project. We don't really have one like that in Minnesota. A large-scale solar storage project and plug-in cars, infrastructure. I mean, these are all, and the smart grid, these are all really important innovations that need to start somewhere, and I hope that we can find a way to make this happen.
Yeah.
So is that your intention, to try to help us figure it out, or do you think there's irreconcilable problems?
I think, Senator Anderson, my greatest concern is that we set a precedent on cost recovery without giving it enough consideration, and I don't think there's reason for the utilities not to move forward. There are a lot of areas where they receive cost recovery. And maybe Mr. Fuller has some additional comments he'd like to make here.
I think there was two concerns, Madam Chair, members of the utility. One was, could they even do these things? You know, could they, or would the PUC say, no, this isn't used and useful. This is too Cadillac. This is gold plating. And the second concern was, how do they recover their costs? So what this amendment does is it says, yes, PUC, you can approve this. These sorts of things are things that can be done if you think they're in the public interest. So that level of concern was raised. Then the next issue is, well, how should they recover? Should it be a general rate case, or should it be by a cost recovery, which doesn't require one? And that's what we're studying. There's a study provision here, and my understanding is we're going to think about that more on the way to conference. So it does address fully the one concern, which is, hey, if we do this, does the PUC have authority to approve it? And this says, yes, they do.
Where does it, Madam Chair, where does it say that?
Well, those are, Madam Chair, members.
Oh, may apply to the 6.1, I guess. May apply, Madam Chair?
The commission may approve, yes, on 6.8.
6.8, commission may approve.
And Madam Chair, Senator Nancy, you can see that 6.13 and 6.15, that language is futuristic, innovative, incenting sort of things like, exploratory, experimental, or research facilities. Those are the sorts of things. So it's very broad that in this area they don't have to, but they can approve these. And so what would happen is, in any instance, the utility would go before the PUC to say, will you approve this? Our conversations with the PUC indicated that if they did, it would be hard-pressed not to give them rate recovery. In fact, they would.
And Madam
Senator
Chair
Anderson.
And Mr. Pillow, when you're talking about going to the commission and getting rate recovery, you're talking about outside the context of a regular rate case or in a regular rate case?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Fuller.
That's the issue. By removing the language by the amendment in D, you are taking away, as the bill now stands, if the amendment was approved, the cost recovery mechanism. So it would be in a general rate case.
Madam Chair, I understand the concerns, and I've been asking a lot of questions about this too, because it is, a lot of authority to charge money to do things. But there, when I think about the dollar amounts, I'm thinking about the other instances where we've approved rate recovery before, and maybe Mr. Fuller can help with the history. But I recall the MERP rider, that was a number of years ago, for the conversion of the old coal plants in Minneapolis and St. Paul. That was about $1 billion rate recovery that was authorized, I think. And then we did the Mercury one, and did we authorize rate recovery as part of that settlement? And what was that? How much money? That was another billion or something like that. It was an enormous price tag, and I guess this is so minuscule compared to those that I wonder if maybe it's not, we shouldn't be as.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Senator Anderson and I haven't yet spoken today. I actually support taking this out with the idea that we're going to work on it going into conference. I don't think the idea, I think cost recovery is a good thing. I think the concern was, are we just going to ask St. Paul residents to pay for the cost recovery, or are we going to ask, the whole service territory to pay for the cost recovery? And that was the major concern that I was made aware of today by the cities.
And somehow they're going to get cost recovery. Mm-hmm. The process may be the question. And the other thing is, if we allow just cost recovery without a rate hearing, we really take away the regulatory authority of the PUC in many ways. It really limits their authority.
True, Madam Chair, but it's also our authority to make that decision.
Well, I believe our responsibility is to be concerned about the ratepayer.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Senjum.
On that point, would cost recovery come from anybody living or owning property within a quarter mile of the route?
No, and as it's written in here now, it would come from the whole service territory. And the question is, who does it benefit?
Madam Chair, is the whole service territory defined?
Well, it's half the state, basically.
Oh.
It's their entire service area. Okay. Senator Dahl renews his motion that strike paragraph D, lines 6.26 through 6.31 on page 6 of the amendment. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And then we had one other section. Oh, and this was this was from Senator Tomasoni's bill. There was language change on this too. And Mr. Fuller, would you like to explain what happened here?
Madam Chairman, as I said earlier, this is part of the old Prairie Island biomass mandate. And so a lot of that language and the details are embedded in statute. There's a long history there. And so as we heard testimony, the bill that was before us basically by fiat rewrote the contract and stripped the commission of the ability to review it. They had to rubber stamp what we told them to do. And the amendment, as you'll see on page 17.27, all the new language, now says that the project owner, which is that local utilities, shall agree to amend the public purchase the power purchase agreement. The amendment shall be negotiated and executed within 45 days. Sets a maximum price cap with some upward movement. Then the utility has to bring it to the PUC, and where previously it was declared by law that the terms of the PUC had to approve it, now it says they just have to act on it in a specific time frame. And that time frame has been discussed with the PUC, who my understanding is think that's a reasonable time frame. So
any discussion about that? Any questions or concerns? Well, then Senator Dahl renews his motion that the Senate File 550 be amended with the A5 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I'm trying to find the section that authorizes SIP for solar. Is that, that's in here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, where's our amendment? Yes, it is.
That's the
page 12.
Madam Chair, it's on page 14, bottom page 14, top page 15.
Oh, thank you. And Madam Chair, I had
this one.
There's a couple of them, Senator Anderson. There's one on page 12.
I'm looking for a section 15, the one that Senator Dahl mentioned that authorizes the percentage of SIP going to solar to jump from 5% to 10%. And I had expressed my concern during the discussion on the bill about switching SIP towards renewables that were a lot more expensive than efficiency without making sure that those investments include energy efficiency. And I did have an amendment prepared that would require that. And Senator Dahl and I have talked about this, and he's concerned that it would maybe, just disincent people to put the solar on if they were told they had to insulate their home first. And I certainly understand where he's coming from on that. I don't want to take away from the effectiveness of offering the solar program. So I just wanted to bring this up because I think it's an important concept. And I have some hesitation about changing our most inexpensive energy program into a more expensive energy program and diluting our energy efficiency efforts, even though I really support the idea of putting more funding out there for solar. I really want to see that happen as well. So I think I'll just, work with the utilities to figure out how we can make sure that will happen, because I just think it wouldn't be a good use of those dollars if people are buying into the solar program but don't insulate their homes.
Sure.
It's really wasting a lot of money, and I just want to make sure that that's not going to happen. So I don't need to offer the amendment now because I think Senator Dahl did have a good point, but I just wanted to point that out, that I think we need to figure out how to remove that disincentive to do efficiency, perhaps, that we may be creating.
Okay. Okay. And Senator Dahl renews his motion that Senate File 550 be amended by the A5 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevailed. So now we have before us the Senate File 550 as amended. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Cope.
Madam Chair, I have the A9 amendment.
And I need to run down from my meeting.
Madam Chair.
I know, but
let's just wait till it's passed out.
You're not gonna be up for an hour, probably. Anyway, I'm sure the meeting I was at was in the meeting with the majority leader. I have to go for something else. It'll be over by now. Whatever. Okay.
Senator Koch, would you want to address your amendment?
Madam Chair, it's fairly straightforward. And it's a discussion that I've been looking forward to having. The A9 amendment lifts the moratorium that's currently in place in the statute on building nuclear power plants in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah.
I guess when we're talking about a lot of energy, nuclear power represents carbon-free baseload energy. We all know, as we've heard testimony, that demand will grow in the state of Minnesota, although we're doing some conservation things to help mitigate that. But I think if you look at the graphs, we're still going to have a growth. I would also add that a lot of potential green policy, cap and trade, could create an even larger demand for growth because as a result of that, I suspect many older coal-fired plants will be shut down as a result of some of the policies that we adopt and creating a greater need for base load. Also, if you want to talk about plug-in hybrid vehicles, and I think we're moving in that direction, that's an increase on our energy demand. And so this bill or this amendment does not put any requirements on nuclear energy. It doesn't lift any of the regulation that we required for putting up a nuclear power plant. It simply says nuclear energy could be part of the mix for Minnesota. It doesn't build a plant. It just leaves it on the table as an option. And I think that's important to our energy mix.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Jungbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is probably for Senate Council. Does this actually lift the moratorium? Because it talks about additional storage of spent nuclear fuel, but it doesn't talk about anywhere about the ability to plan for or construct a nuclear power plant. So I don't know what the rest of the statute reads if we do it this way.
Senator Jungbar, I think it's striking right. The language that says the commission may not issue a certificate of need.
Well, so I'm trying to make sure it does open it up.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll speak against the amendment. I think it would be a distraction at this point in time to focus on to start spending the time and money that it would take to contemplate a new nuclear power plant, knowing from what I've heard and understand, a new one couldn't be built till 2025. And all of the, I just hate to think that all of the efforts that we're making and all the progress we're making on global warming would go sort of in the direction of focusing on nuclear as a solution, given that our solutions need to be happening in the next decade if we're going to be effective on global warming. And so, number one, I think it's too far off to be a solution, at least in the short term, for global warming. Perhaps in 20 years, when we've resolved some of the issues with nuclear power, it will be one of the solutions. But you know, I've been in the middle of these debates since 1994. How many? 15 years in the Senate we've been debating this, and it seems to me that the issues that we raised in 1994, none of them have changed. And the waste disposal issue is no closer to a solution now than it was 15 years ago. In fact, it looks like the federal government is backing off there's been sort of a very mixed message coming from Washington for many years about the progress of Yucca Mountain, and now the signals we're getting are that it's being stalled. And so without a solution to the waste problem, I just don't think it's responsible for us to contemplate creating new plants and more waste, especially given that Minnesota was at one point on the list as a potential national site for waste disposal. And I would hate to see if the federal government is moving in the direction of requiring states to have that responsibility for many decades to come to be responsible for nuclear waste. I would hate to see Minnesota be in the spotlight as a potential place to take other states' waste as well. I don't think Minnesotans would want to see us be a national repository for nuclear waste, and I don't think they want us to have the waste sitting here in our state for decades to come. And that's the only thing future I could contemplate now, because we haven't solved that problem. And I guess the third point I would make is that it's incredibly costly, and the amount of taxpayer support that the nuclear industry has been asking is up there with the banking industry in terms of the money that they're asking for to be able to move forward. And so I just don't think it's good economics. I think it's not. We just haven't. It's too expensive and too risky at this time.
Senator Cole.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Anderson. I have to address a couple of the issues. The first thing you talked about was focus, and we heard that last night. And it was interesting because it came from the same gentleman. He spoke, kind of had some fun, at France's expense. 80% of France's nuclear energy comes from nuclear fuel, 80%. And he said some good things about that, but he also pointed out that they're sort of stuck. But then he moved on to say, but don't lift your moratorium, focus. And I thought that's very ironic, and he falls into the same trap that France fell into with nuclear power. If we put all our eggs in one basket, that's exactly the problem. Focusing on only one could potentially be a mistake. And frankly, Madam Chair, in this bill and last year, I think it could be said, our whole focus was renewable energy. It was. And I think that we should be cautious on that. I would speak to the waste issue because I represent an area where we are currently storing nuclear waste. My parents live on a lake minutes from where the waste is being stored. So I have I have skin in the game. And I think I want the federal government to solve that problem. I would say, Senator Anderson, whenever we bring up, I'll kind of give you the same argument that I hear when we say, well, why should we have state cap and trade? Why should we do a California emission standard? And I hear the responses all the time, because the pressure comes from the states to the federal government. And I would give you the same response on that. I think that if we lift the moratorium, as many other states are doing, in fact, I think there's 16 states that have license applications to the NRC currently for nuclear power plants. If we put the pressure on from the states, I think that we'll have to, the federal government will have to act. And so I don't think ignoring that problem is going to help the waste situation whatsoever. In fact, I think that we could put some pressure. And finally, as to cost, I've heard arguments that it's costly. I understand the cost of a nuclear power plant. I also know that per kilowatt hour, nuclear energy is very cost efficient. I would also point out that unlike a lot of the renewable energy policies that we have implemented, there's no requirement for nuclear energy. There's no 25%. There's nothing waived here. The PUC will still have to follow through and be mindful of the cost to the ratepayers. There's no requirement. There's no preference given to nuclear power in this. There's no cost recovery, as there are in many of the provisions in this bill for renewable energy. So this simply says it's an option. And frankly, I think Minnesota's a little behind on this. I think that we should leave this as part of the discussion. That's all I'll say, Madam Chair.
Senator Jungbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess primarily to Senator Anderson's discussion is it doesn't cost us anything to lift the moratorium. So, and if the focus takes us out 15 years, then I guess it's really focusing wrong to say we shouldn't lift it because it's 15 years out, because then it just puts us further and further out for the solution. You know, since wind costs two times as much as coal and solar costs 10 times as much as coal, we need to have everything on the table. We need to have everything in a toolbox. And I would say that I think our policy has gone the wrong direction. It is not warming out there. It is, in fact, cooling. And right now we are going to be at a terrible loss of power to heat houses, a terrible loss of power for people to have their lights on should we see a cooling. And cooling has an amazing exponential effect of being able to turn around much faster than any projections on anything to do with global warming. So when you actually study the paleoclimatology and look at the direction with solar cycles, with the Pacific decadal oscillations, with the ocean conveyor belts and how that controls the climate, you really need to understand that when it starts shifting backwards, downhill like it's doing, we need to think about both ends of the spectrum. And that's why I don't normally get in the discussion of some of these energy efficiency things. Energy efficiency is always good whether it's getting hot or whether it's getting cold. So we need to focus on everything that we can do that covers both ends of the spectrum, or we do not do the citizens any justice. And so by removing the moratorium, all we are doing is opening the discussion. Nothing needs to move forward. And that 15 years or whatever it takes to put a nuclear power plant on the ground is primarily from mandates. It's all the hurdles we put in the way that keep us from getting something on the ground quickly.
Further discussion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Anderson, I think you said it well. The focus that you talk about is necessary. We can't lose our focus on this renewable initiative that we're going on. And as we, if we start to open the discussion up, all these other ideas about how we would go forward with developing nuclear is going to also take up time. But the most important part of this whole thing is still the waste issue. That is primarily the issue here. And I disagree that if we lift the moratorium that that's somehow going to apply pressure. I believe that if the pot is on the stove and it's bubbling, you keep that cover on, it's going to bubble over. And we keep that lid on nuclear. I'm not afraid of nuclear, but it's that waste issue, and we have not solved it. We created the waste in our lifetime here. We cannot keep pushing it off forever. It's time to solve this issue, and we need to apply pressure on the federal government to solve this, but lifting this is not the direction that we need to go with this. We can't have storage sites all over the country. We need one repository, and until that's solved, I think it's really unwise for us to even think about opening up the discussion.
Senator Jungar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Dahl on the waste issue. We need to go back historically and think about the waste issue, because we never allowed nuclear in the country until the federal government promised us a repository for the waste. All of us paid for that repository. The money's sitting there to finish it or bring it up to speed at what we're at today. We pay in every electric rate to make sure that happens. Interestingly enough, Nevada is open for that discussion again. With their budget, they just say, well, hey, you know, we'd like to fix our budget, so, hey, we're wide open to the discussion of Yucca. So it's been politicians, not the people of Nevada, that have kept us from having Yucca Mountain opened. And we should look at the discussion of new nuclear plants, because there isn't the same waste issue. I personally don't believe we ought to keep running the same kind of waste we're running out of nuclear. I don't think we ought to allow expansion of the existing nuclear plants. I think we ought to look at new technology. The way the fuel's processed, the way the waste is, it's a whole different thing. I mean, we're talking 50s and 60s technology that's out there today. We don't deal with that anymore. It's a whole different world. And to put blinders on and assume that everything's the same as it was back in the 50s and 60s, we just don't even look at what reality is. So we do need to get on the federal government. And it's only because of the way they want to go and, you know, their political goals that we don't finish Yucca Mountain. We could reprocess the fuel that's there, but that's been banned as well. So secondary generation, France has done a lot with that. We could open up secondary generation alongside our primary. Again, I don't think expanding the existing sites is a good thing, but that waste has a lot of power in it, and that can power a lot of secondary generation units. So there's a lot of options, but with a moratorium, we can't even look at the options.
Further discussion? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I appreciate the good senator bringing this bill forward. I think it's important. It's time to do this. It's common sense. Just because you left a moratorium doesn't mean a power plant's going to be built anytime soon. And for those that want to, you know, kill that power plant, there's local ordinances, there's state permits, there's all kinds of other barriers that safeguard the public should anything like this happen that's unsafe. But you know, and renewable energy is fine, and we've gone down that road, but let us not ever forget, you know, we need baseload energy. and we need to prepare for those kind of energy needs, and it's going to be either coal or nuclear. I don't think, as somebody said last night, perhaps there's not going to be any more dams on the Mississippi River or anywhere else. It's coal or nuclear for that baseload energy, and so let's give those that are involved in providing public electricity an opportunity, at least, to consider nuclear. Again, they may or may not, but I think the idea that we would have a moratorium on a nuclear power in Minnesota is somewhat an arcane idea. It just seems like we ought to just lift that and let, you know, kind of let the world happen, and it will happen just fine.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm inclined to support this amendment, except that I don't think it's the proper way we should do this. I think it's such a big deal we should have it vetted at a regular committee hearing, and I would be more, but there's no time for that, my understanding. We've kind of passed that.
Madam Chair.
That yardstick.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Senator Olsen. I guess you kind of get to my point, Senator Olsen. I would desperately like to have a hearing on this in this committee, and I'd like to have a vote. At this time, Madam Chair, at this moment, I'll withdraw the amendment. But I think we owe it to, I'm looking around the table, and I've talked to most folks on this. I'd say over half this table has expressed support for this amendment. Half the table's got their names on bills that lift this moratorium. There's three authors sitting right here. Sorry, Senator Rummel. Not Senator Rummel, but Senator Jungbauer, Senator Carlson, and Senator Koch are chief authors on these bills sitting in Energy Committee. I think we should be having this discussion and hearings in this committee. And I think it should be happening soon. Now, I understand we're looking at deadlines tomorrow. And after that, it's sort of dead for the session. But I Senator Prentner-Soul and I would really strongly like to see something coming out to this committee, probably next session, something before committee deadlines with an actual vote. I think we owe it to the people of Minnesota.
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And that, Senator Olsen, you lead right to it. For how many years have we had this bill up to, you know, many authors to repeal the moratorium? For years, and we can't get a hearing. So for years, we can't even discuss it. It's taboo, so those that control the hearings won't let us have the discussion, and that is very frustrating. Is it that bad that we can't even discuss it? We finally had a hearing last night to talk about the whole issue, and I loved it. I really appreciate that. So we're finally getting somewhere, but it has been years that we've been trying to move towards that.
And Madam Chair, I would just like to point out that, yes, I did appreciate the Legislative Energy Commission's hearing last night. And I know, you know, grief as I give your staff on this, they've been very helpful on the issue. And I'd like to thank you, too, because I think that we're getting closer than I've ever seen to have a discussion on nuclear energy in this committee. And I appreciate that. So thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Koch, I do appreciate your withdrawing the amendment at this time. I agree. We need the discussion, and I feel like I have a lot that I have to learn yet. Last night was a good start on much of that information. We haven't heard from the public about this, though, and I'm sure that there are other experts that we can hear from, and I think that we also need to have a discussion. And I have to say the thing that really concerns me the most is, as many have expressed, is the lack of storage or a solution for how we're going to store the nuclear waste at this time. So, we will have a hearing. I promise you that.
Madam Chair, I'll wait for the date.
I think it's important for us to get the issue out and to, and we have started that process now. So, we will have a hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Rosen.
Well, I probably should just leave with, that was wonderful that you ended on that. And Senator Koch, thank you for the amendment and for withdrawing it. And it's kind of like a confession here. We just had a nice talk about this, and we're getting someplace. My question, though, is what happened to the hearing in the House on this today? Does anybody know?
I don't think they've had it yet.
It's
tonight.
Yes. Oh, it's tonight. Okay.
Yes. Any further discussion or amendments on the bill? Senator Senjum.
Oh, my. I have to go back to Senator Rosen, and I'm not going to pick you on Senator Rosen, but and I'm not doing it. I'm honestly, for those that read this bill, and honestly, I think I can speak for Senator Sharon and I because we've been whispering, but if we look at line 123 and try to understand it from the standpoint of when do you report and what do you report, we know what to report, but as a, for instance, total number of customers, what is the framework of the reporting? Is it the total number of customers during the heating season, and that's to be reported by, is it the August after the heating season? And if that's the case, I think there's some need for a little greater clarity on that room 123 in terms of how that's worded. At least I struggle with it, and I think Senator Sharon may struggle with it a little bit also.
Senator Rosen. It seems to me that language indicates it would be the previous heating season that's being reported no later than August 1st.
Yes.
Madam Chair and Council, does the word next offer value to that line?
Next, it throws us off.
Mr. Fuller, is there a definition of next?
Oh, Madam Chair, I think there's a definition of next. Yes, I appreciate the point Senator Senjum is raising, which is what's the snapshot in time we're looking at for this information? I mean, how do they know if they had 400 customers in November and 500 customers in December? So that clarity is lacking. I suppose that when the form is prepared, you know, that may answer some of it, but I think you have a valid point that you probably need some more clarity as to at what juncture in time you want to validate this information.
Madam Chair, is that... I'm sorry.
Senator Senjum, yes.
Madam Chair, and thank you. Is that the kind of thing that can be worked out in conference committee, just, you know, through the deliberations, or do we have to try to fix it now if we want to try to offer clarity?
What I heard Senator Senjum is that Senator Rosen would be willing to continue working on it as we're going into conference committee, and we understand that these are issues the committee has, and we will be working on them also. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to suggest that we have a heating season designated by the cold weather rule from October 15th to April 15th, I think, and so that would be a logical date to put in here. Maybe not right now, but I'm just offering that as a suggestion.
Yeah, and I think that already is noted on lines 2.14 and 2.15.
Oh, right there. Well, I didn't even read that. Okay. Oh, so the heating season is defined.
I don't think that we want to try wordsmithing it right now, but we will. We hear your concerns, and we'll take it into the conference committee.
Madam Chair and Senator Senjum, I will definitely straighten that out.
Okay. Senator Dahl renews his motion that Senate File 550, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the floor. Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair. And I feel a little guilty, once again, asking my own member on this, but Senator Rosen, on line 124, which does not refer to LEAP customers, everything else seems to, but line 124 does not. Is there value to the state of Minnesota knowing how many customers LEAP and otherwise that a business might have?
Senator Rosen.
For purposes of whatever the purpose of this reporting is.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
And Senator Senjum, I understand where you're coming from. I guess it's in probably relation to line point 3.1, the number of customers on Keep Fill, a proportion of how many customers are doing Keep Fill, how many are full and partial pre-buy customers, just to give a reference point. I understand, Senator Senjum, that you're probably, your concern is about the disclosure and where is this information going. And I could certainly ask council and Mr. Glahn to say perhaps there should be some language in there saying that this information is treated as private under the business.
Yes.
Subject to data practices or something like that.
I think that would do it.
But it still needs to be available, Madam Chair, to the agencies that need to know who are serving these people, need to know, are these dollars being used correctly?
Senator Rosen, do you have an understanding of what the concerns are? And are you willing to continue to work on this?
Oh, absolutely, Madam Chair. Yeah.
Okay.
Unless there's more concerns that they haven't told me. I'm getting that just come.
Yes.
But your door will be open, right?
Yes.
Okay. Any further concerns? Senator Dahl renews his motion. Senate File 550 is amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the floor. All those in favor of the motion signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed. Motion prevails. Okay. Senator Anderson, we have a couple of your bills up.
Republican infighting.
Thank you, members.
Republican infighting.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Hi, Linda. I have two bills, and I know they're listed. Obviously, they're two separate bills, but they're basically the same. And so we have the same witnesses, and I wonder if I could just sort of talk about them both at the same time, just in
sure.
the interest of time.
Sure.
One is for local governments, and one is for school districts, and they're both for the same purpose. And they started initially as bonding bill requests to get bonding dollars to fund renewable energy projects for schools and local government buildings. And obviously that's not part of the Senate's bonding bill this year. We have a small bill, and maybe next year we'll have an opportunity to do that. But in the meantime, we wanted to change these bills into requests for federal stimulus dollars and see if we could fit that into our stimulus bill to put some grants out on the table for local governments and school districts to do renewable energy projects. And so, as it says, Senate File 1006 is the local government program, and Senate File 997 is the school district program. And I have an amendment on each of them. And so whatever is the procedurally best way to do this, I guess I should just go one at a time.
Senate File
1006. I'd like to offer the A1 amendment just to put that in the right shape for the committee as an author's amendment, and it will change it from a bonding request to a stimulus funds request. So I would
okay.
offer the A1 amendment.
That amendment is before us, and this is an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape that she would like it. So all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And is it all right if I do the same thing on Senate File 997 now?
Go ahead.
Okay. On Senate File 997, the School District Renewable Energy Grant Program, I'd like to offer the A1 amendment to put that in the same shape.
And Senator Anderson offers the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. It does basically the same thing, only for the school districts. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank
okay,
you.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, and I'd like to, I have five people who will be brief, I promise, who want to speak in support of these bills, and I would just ask them to speak if they are in support of the school district proposal in particular, to say that, or for both, or local government. They can do that all at once, and we don't have to have them come back twice. So why don't I get right to the witnesses, and then we can have some discussion about the need for this in addition if there's questions. So I have first is Ralph Jacobson on my right from Innovative Power Systems, who's one of our solar experts in the state of Minnesota, and on my left, Linda Taylor from Fresh Energy. So we'll start with them, and then I'll bring up the other two.
Okay, Mr. Jacobson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
I have been making the world safe for solar since 1991.
Just identify yourself for the record, please.
Oh, yes. Ralph Jacobson, Innovative Power Systems, a business based in Minneapolis. Have three comments, one in regards to the local government bill, and then a couple on the schools. The local government, I guess I've been playing in the market since 1991 here, and it's been a boutique market. Very difficult to play in, small and capricious, comes and goes. But think about two markets. There's a global market, which is huge and growing, and there's a local market, which needs to grow but is very small. And the only companies that are able to play in the global market are really the larger, more well-developed and well-established companies like 3M. However, if you apply the 80-20 rule, there are probably a lot of jobs that could be created by small manufacturers. Small manufacturers need a local market to play in, to interact with, to improve their products, to develop the business relationships, you know, get themselves together so that they can get the financing to grow. And so we really need this bill is about creating that local market, giving people like me tools to work with to develop that local market. And that's going to actually give us a bonanza in terms of not only installer jobs, but manufacturing jobs that then we will need in order to satisfy the market we're playing in. The schools, I am on the Curriculum and Training Committee of the Minnesota Renewable Energy Society. And I just want to make you aware of a couple other things going on here that are kind of in parallel with the school's Solar on Schools bill. Last year, four utilities around the state, the major utilities, joined to finance a solar thermal training program, especially for heating and plumbing contractors. And we did our dog and pony show around the state, and a lot of outstate contractors got a chance to get 2 days of solar training, and this is to get them ready for incentive programmings coming down the pike. The Minnesota Renewable Energy Society was the fiscal agent and coordinated that. This year, because we've been talking about the solar on schools now, Minnesota Renewable Energy Society is in discussion with CERTS, that's the Clean Energy Resource Teams, to coordinate the insertion of the solar on schools idea and funding into the Cutting Carbon in Schools program of CERTS, which is a better structure that's already been established. It's a good network. And so we're talking about how do we market this to the school districts effectively without reinventing the wheel. So these two things are going on, that we've developed the cadre of local businesses that can actually work with the school districts. And so now we need to put them to work.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. Ms. Taylor, did you want to add some things as well?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Linda Taylor. I'm with Fresh Energy. I'm the Clean Energy Director there. We'd like to thank Senator Anderson for her unstinting work on behalf of renewable energy and energy efficiency. Fresh Energy is an energy policy organization, and so what I would like to talk about in these bills that we like is the policy. I would direct your attention, I guess, from Senate File 1006 to the second page, looking at lines 2.3 through lines 2.13. This is a really good set of criteria for when you're looking at doing small renewable energy projects on buildings. We do want to see a pairing of good, solid energy efficiency and energy conservation with the addition of renewable generation. We like the concept of looking at cost effectiveness. We like the concept of looking at the total life cycle. We like geographic distribution, et cetera. So we are particularly happy to see these kinds of criteria put in these kinds of bills. In general, the concept of doing small wind energy projects, of doing solar projects, et cetera, with schools and public buildings, we think is an excellent one for moving the state forward into the solar energy future. Something I would like to just note is that the Berkeley Lab of the U.S. Department of Energy just finished a study looking at the costs of PV and what has happened to it over the past 10 years. And between 1998 and 2007, the cost of photovoltaic installations has decreased by about 3.5% per year. according to this study. That tends to be greater when there are government incentive programs, especially coupled with utility programs, especially coupled with community involvement. And this, the idea of using schools and local governments, the state, federal stimulus dollars, et cetera, tends to combine to help move both solar technology forward, to bring the costs down, and eventually getting to the point where the costs will be where we are with wind energy today, where it is a very viable resource for the long term. So we're very happy to see these, very happy to see these bills.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Senator Anderson, what I do like as well in your bills is the Minnesota product preference. I think that's a good idea, and the educational programming on the school part of it. So those both good provisions. If I might, since I have both your testifiers here, and they were kind of talking about, we're talking about public buildings here. I know, Mr. Jacobson, you work also in the private sector a lot with residential. We were just discussing a little bit earlier about the SIP rewards program. So I agree that especially in energy or public buildings that we need to integrate those right at the front end, that there should be energy efficiencies actually before we put those renewables in. But maybe, Mr. Jacobson, if you could give me your take, being an entrepreneur in this field, working in the residential market, most of the time I would assume people are going to integrate those two functions, the energy efficiencies with the renewables. But in the case where if there's an incentive program where people can get a very good incentive to put solar in, do we want to put that energy efficiency component in prior to them being able to qualify for those type of rebates? Or do you think it would be a disincentive? What is your feeling on it, just since I have you here?
Well, I'm always kicking my salesmen and making sure that they don't oversell solar, because I really want to see – I used to be an energy auditor, and I really want to see people spend their money wisely, spend it right. And, you know, if you reduce your loads now, if you want to, you know, handle what – or produce enough to cover what you use in your house, and you've lowered your loads, let's say, by 25%, well, now you can spend 25% less on a solar system. So it's just it's a good combination. I guess there's also a debate going on about whether or not cost-effectiveness measures that were really developed for conservation and efficiency should be applied to solar in that SIP application. And I would say that I am in favor, and I guess this is my opinion, I'm not speaking for anybody else, that we should really move in the direction of eligibility rather than a cost-effectiveness test. It's an eligibility test. If you've done the due diligence, let's say, to spend the money on conservation and brought your house up to a certain standard, or your building, if it's a commercial application, up to a certain standard of efficiency, now that triggers eligibility for the SIP for solar. That's actually my impression of the way that German utilities do it. And, you know, I think we should probably emulate them. They have a roaring solar industry there, and they're not leaving conservation behind.
Okay.
So does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much. We'll have to have more discussions on that. Members, are there any questions on either of these two bills from our testifiers or Senator Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I have someone from the school districts as well as from the cities who'd like to speak.
Okay.
If I could, let them briefly. Thank
very
you
well. I'm sorry. Sorry,
much.
Senator Anderson. I didn't
no problem.
See that.
I know,
okay.
And we're trying to be brief here, but Charlie Kite is here, and I really want him to talk about his discussions with his member districts about this. Charlie Kite from the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and Ann Higgins from the League of Cities. Oh, and Brad Leto from the AFL-CIO. We have a lot of enthusiasm about this idea, so we'll...
Well, Mr. Kite, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and essentially we represent all the school superintendents in the state of Minnesota. Just looking at the time of day and all that you're going through, it hits me that we should have some way of just doing a little energy boost for everybody here in the room right now. But, you know, it's a hard time of the day. There's a short survey passed out, and I won't take a lot of time with it, but I will say to you, based on that survey, looking at about 190 school districts in the state quite quickly, there's very good interest in this. A lot of the school districts have been engaged in energy conservation up to now. And there's interest also if they could find a source of some funding to get into what I would call small-scale energy production. And the 2 points I would like to make, and Mr. Chair, you almost covered these a little bit beforehand. Not only would this be an energy-effective idea, but it also is educationally effective, where you have the opportunity for students to, number one, see the efforts to produce energy and conserve energy, and secondly, to walk away with a mindset when they leave school that this is something we should be doing as adults. I'll just recall that in the 1970s, it was the elementary school children of Minnesota that literally began the recycling movement in the entire nation, where they started recycling in elementary schools. Those young people are now all adults, and recycling is a somewhat of a way of life. Finally, I would just say this. We particularly like the idea of this having some inclination to build Minnesota companies. It's difficult to get into this business, and here's an opportunity possibly to have a base market from which these companies can first sell, and then you can start to build your businesses. So we support Senate File 997. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kite. Let's hear from Ms. Higgins.
Good afternoon, members, Mr. Chair. I'm Ann Higgins from the League of Minnesota Cities. I just briefly want to speak on behalf of the bill. The League has taken some time, not as thorough a survey as I think the school administrators have, but have received information from over half of our members' cities indicating interest in renewable efforts that they either have already begun to take or would like to use federal stimulus money for, and I'm sure that this program will be a wonderful encouragement if we can have some of the efforts that Senator Anderson has directed in this bill, and we do support it.
Madam Chair, my name and committee members, my name is Brad Lutto, Chief of Staff for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and also served on the Green Jobs Task Force along with the co-chair, Senator Anderson, Senator Youngbauer, and I believe there's at least one, if not two more members of the task force in the room. We definitely support both bills, Senate File 1006 and Senate File 997. But in particular, I just wanted to mention again Subdivision 6 of Senate File 1006 and Subdivision 7 of Senate File 997, the Minnesota Product Preference section. And I think that's very important to encourage businesses here in Minnesota and the manufacturing of products and of that will be used in whether it's solar or wind, that sort of thing in Minnesota. And so I'll leave it at that and be happy to answer any questions, but certainly support pieces of legislation.
Okay. Senator Anderson, we've just received notice we have to be back in session at 5:15, so we're going to try to move these bills as quickly as possible, and Senator Rosen has a bill too.
Madam Chair, just closing comments, if I may, really briefly. And Senator Dahl, I want to mention, was very engaged in the Green Jobs Task Force as well, and we heard a lot about support for this idea, about renewables in local governments and schools. There's a tremendous amount of enthusiasm around the state for that. The idea that we want to try to encourage not just the installation of those small projects for the benefits that those districts will and cities will receive in energy savings or in, being part of cleaning their air and water, but also the educational aspect of it, and the fact that we can stimulate the development of these local industries. So that's what the Minnesota Preference is about, to try to, if we're using public money to buy Minnesota-made solar panels or Minnesota-made wind turbines, whenever we can do that, I think is a good thing as well. So it's got a lot of win-wins to it.
Okay. Senator Anderson moves Senate File 1006 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to finance. Discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Anderson moves that Senate File 997 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to finance. Discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I'm sorry, Senator Sharon, did you have your hand up?
Oh.
Yeah, it's, I can ask it later. Okay.
Sorry.
No problem.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Rosen.
Chair, members.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. I have Senate File 1062, which is the governor's green jobs, jobsy, basically. And we're before you in this committee because of Article 4, basically.
Okay.
There's four articles to it. The first one is about green jobs. And very briefly, it is it's jobsy on steroids, basically. We took all the recommendations, or the governor and the departments took all the recommendations of the changes and the needs for better business subsidy agreements and jobsy, and wanted to gear it more towards green jobs to help reach our renewable energy standard. And Article 2 and 3 are more in the investment part of it. Article 4 is the biomethane energy section of it, which basically promotes small-scale renewable energy, such as anaerobic digesters, gasification, and solar. And it would help utilities meet their 1.5 energy savings on the SIP goal. Madam Chair, I have actually three amendments in front of you. If I could, since this has already been through another committee, would this be an author's amendment, even though it's been through?
No.
No, okay. I have the A1 amendment in front of you.
Okay. We do have all three amendments in front of us, so why don't you start with the A1 amendment and tell us what it does. And
okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. It would basically allow biomethane projects to count towards the SIP minimum energy savings goal of at least 1%. And that is because gas utilities have already been doing many energy saving initiatives, and it's harder for them to get to this 1%. So we need to include all of the projects.
Okay,
and it's page 56.
Okay,
line
8, 10, and 11.
Yes.
And 12. Senator Rosen moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
If I may. Madam Chair, yesterday we included in our omnibus bills that natural gas portion of it. Is there any conflict between what we're doing here with biomethane and gas products and the natural gas initiative that's in the omnibus bill?
Senator Rosen?
Madam Chair and Senator, Madam Chair, could I have Doug Peterson, from Director of Marketing from CenterPoint Energy, explain that, please?
Okay. Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Doug Peterson. I'm the Director of Marketing and Sales. I do not believe there's any conflict. I believe that this provision here in Article 4, it promotes biomethane projects by Minnesota gas utilities and allows them to count as SIP projects. And I think that the other provisions in the bill also are promoting biomethane projects. So I don't believe there's any inconsistency.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion? Then Senator Rosen renews her motion that the A1 amendment be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Rosen.
I have the A2 amendment in front of you.
On
page 57, line 25, basically expand the definition to include all types of biomethane.
Okay. Any discussion about the motion? Then on the A2 amendment, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have the A09-0111 amendment in front of you.
Okay. And?
And that amendment is from Office of Energy, and just striking small in both places on line 2 and on line 5, delete the new language and strike the old languages.
Okay. Any discussion about the amendment? And Senator Rosen renews her motion. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Rosen.
And thank you, Madam Chair. If there's one more thing I could say about Article 4 is that it does increase the total peak generating capacity of qualifying solar electric projects from 100 to 200 kilowatts or less for generating electricity, primarily using for residential or small businesses. And that is basically the crux of that Article 4. And I'm did the 10,000.
You're right.
You know, fly over on this bill. But it's a very exciting bill. There are some other bills out there. Senator Anderson has a bill dealing with green jobs, and the recommendations in this bill came from the Green Jobs Task Force that she chaired, and there's different Article 2 and 3 as far as the investment and the tax credits. There are separate bills going in that direction, but the premise is that we need to get jobs going, and this is a way, this is a very good directive, and this is one of our premier economic tools, and we're directing it towards green jobs throughout the entire state, 12 years on his own, and they have up to December of 2015 to apply.
Mr. Peterson, anything you want to add?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll keep my comments very brief. CenterPoint Energies is here to testify in support of Amendment A1 and A2, and we believe that biomethane is the only renewable form of natural gas. We think it's a very positive development. We support the A1 amendment to count these projects as SIP projects, and that will allow us to immediately pursue this renewable technology. It'll give us the certainty that we need to move forward with these types of projects. And we believe that also the ability to count these biomethane projects as SIP is critical to being able to have the type of financial incentives that are needed to make this developing technology happen. And then real briefly on the A2 amendment, which expands the definition of qualifying biomethane energy project. We think it's very important to include not only the anaerobic digestion form of biomass, but also to include gasification of biomass and any other efficient process. And so by the A2 amendment, it will allow us to increase the number of potential biomethane projects, and we believe that it should be included. And that is the end of my comments.
Mr. Peterson, give us a little explanation of why it should be counted as SIP.
We believe that biomethane is really the only renewable type of natural gas. You look at electricity, you have many different types of things there. You have solar, you have wind, you have hydro. We have nothing like this. Of course, you recall that under this law, we can only spend up to 5% of our SIP funding on these types of projects, similar to electric utilities can spend up to 5% of their money on these types of things. I guess the rationale for including it is when a customer is using biomethane, it has exactly the same kind of environmental benefits that SIP projects have. In other words, there is no incremental environmental impact caused by the biomethane because it's a renewable form. It's using methane that would otherwise have been released into the atmosphere without being captured.
I understand the renewable aspect of it. I'm not sure that I understand the SIP aspect of it.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, I think it goes to the fact that it's the same type of benefits for the customer. If a customer uses a SIP project and they do something, put in a higher efficiency furnace, for example, they're therefore using less energy and they're benefiting the environment. By using biomethane projects, and currently we have no biomethane projects on our system. We're hoping to try to jumpstart this technology. But by using biomethane, the customer would also be using, they'd also be emitting no environmental impacts based on that usage. So it accomplishes about the same type of thing from an environmental perspective, and I think it would be similar to the types of projects that are allowed for electric utilities under this law currently.
Well, I'm not sure I understand. Usually SIP means you use less, that you get the same results, you get better results out of using less. And I understand it's a renewable energy. I'm not sure I understand how it's conservation. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I just want to make sure I understand this. So there's a 5% allowance for renewables out of the natural gas SIP also, is that true or not? And this is out of that 5%? Or am I completely wrong?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, that's what this is providing for a new provision of qualifying biomethane projects.
Well, Madam Chair, I see
Senator
that,
but Anderson.
The question is, okay, it says within the extent of the spending allowed for generation projects. So is that the 5%? Is there a 5% in the natural gas SIP,
do you know
like
that?
There was for solar in the electric SIP?
Madam Chair, if I may.
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, I believe that's the case. On page 56 of the full bill, it talks about 216B.2411, distribution energy resources. It talks about the 5% limitation, and you have a number of projects there that would qualify on the electric utility side, and the new provision, Section 4, would allow qualifying biomethane energy projects.
Okay. Senator Dahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the same issue, you said that you don't have any such types of projects going right now. Is that correct? Do you have this available? If someone wanted to buy a furnace, for instance, they can. In this case, what can they do to actually use this biomethane that you want qualified? Can I have some examples?
Sure. I'll try to, Madam Chair, Senator. The biomethane could be, right now we do not have any customers that are, basically this is pipeline quality biomethane, so that it's something that can be transported and delivered in our distribution system. We have no customers that have contracted with a production facility to do that. However, there are production facilities out there. The University of Minnesota Morris has developed a biomethane plant. It's using all of its own, it's using all of that product at its own facility. However, if they expanded that and they had excess under this provision, it would allow them to move that to other customers. It would provide another avenue for them to move that. And so we're looking at the possibility of working with, for example, agricultural waste, feedlots. They could easily put in an anaerobic digester that could produce biomethane. Then that could go into our distribution system, and our customers could buy that biomethane. So it would become a renewable form of natural gas used by them.
And so I'm having Madam Chair, the same problem understanding this, too, that by qualifying a renewable energy in this case.
Well, it has the same issue that I have a question about solar being set.
Right.
As. So Senator Jungbar and then Senator Anderson.
Well, yeah, and Madam Chair, I'm kind of thinking through that, and really what you're talking is kind of a supplanting or a replacement of a natural or renewable energy form for, you know, something that we're harvesting today that's has a limited or finite amount. So I see where they're trying to go with it, but maybe we have to have a broader discussion on how we implement that, because it does have a benefit, but it's I don't think we've really discussed how do we account for that in terms of a conservation of a finite resource.
Okay. Senator Anderson, anything further?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess two questions. One is, on line 56.8, with the amendment, you're crossing out not and saying that energy savings may be counted towards the minimum energy savings goal of at least 1% for energy conservation. I don't think we did that in the solar in your bill.
Right.
And I'm not sure that that's a good idea. I'm not sure how that would work to allow this to count towards that percent. It could be used for the spending requirement, but not for the energy savings requirement.
Right.
So I'm not sure if I like that part of the amendment, to strike not and leave it. I think maybe we should leave that law the way that part of the law the way it is. And one other question, Madam Chair.
Pardon, Senator Anderson.
Is there a definition of biomethane? Is this definitely 100% renewable? I guess I want to make sure we're not talking about some blend or something that's 2% bioproducts and 98%, fossil fuel. So that would be my other question. If we could be a little tighter on those definitions, then I would be more comfortable.
Senator Anderson, it is defined.
Okay.
On page 57.
Subdivision 2.
Where? Yeah, on 57.22.
Okay.
Okay. Madam Chair, the whole subdivision is the definition also in statute, so.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I wonder if, Senator Rosen, if you would object a lot if I just change that one word from your amendment, if I can find it. I guess on your A1 amendment, it's line 1.2 where it says delete not. I'd like to delete that sentence, if that makes sense.
Amendment to restore.
I think, Senator Anderson, we'd have to reconsider the whole amendment.
I'm sorry. Okay.
And Madam Chair, if I might on that point.
Senator Dahl.
The last year what we did on the solar is it counted only for that upper half a percent. And now it's what we're doing with it sounds like by taking this word not out of there, we're saying we can apply it to any portion of it, any portion of that 1.5%. I would prefer also that we just keep it as a kind of the carrot out there that you can still apply it if you've reached these other goals in the 1%, and then would apply to that upper half percent.
Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair, I think the issue is natural gas utilities are having a hard time trying to reach these goals. And as Mr. Peterson said, these are, if you take this amendment out, it's going to delay investment and development of these projects for at least 5 years. And I'm having a problem. I guess I don't understand why this cannot be part of it. I think you have to treat, wind is certainly different than the solar, and it's certainly different than biomethane. And, I mean, we should look at each one individually.
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, members, I think one other point that I would add to Senator Rosen's comment is that electric utilities have been over 1% for many years with their existing SIP programs. A natural gas utility like CenterPoint Energy has had a program since 1992. We have one of the biggest and one of the best programs in the country. We're still at about 0.5 to 0.6% energy savings per year. It's going to take us, based on a study that we've had a Navigant Consulting prepare for us, it's going to take 4 to 5 years under the best-case scenarios to get to 1%. The reason why we want to have the biomethane projects count towards that 1% is if we don't, we really won't be able to provide incentives and pursue these projects until about 2014, and we really want to start doing this now. We don't want to wait.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, I think if we just keep the language in the bill that Senator Rosen started with, it allows you to spend the money on it. And so that should get you part of the way there. I thought Senator Dibble's bill that I was a little reluctant to support. I mean, Senator Dibble's bill yesterday that is probably in the omnibus bill extends the time that you have to meet those energy savings goals. And so I'm not sure that we need to.
I think we have to go.
Senator Rosen, I'm going to recommend that we delete the whole section. The whole article, and that we amended to the conference committee or to the
omnibus
bill.
Madam Chair, to work on this further, that
I would like you to work on it, and we can bring it to the floor and add it on to the omnibus bill on the floor before it goes to conference committee.
Okay. Madam Chair, it's not really
necessary to this bill.
Is the rest of the bill going to
be? Madam Chair, it's kind of ironic because I really didn't need to come here. And because of this, you needed to come here. We were short on time, and so we suggested to come here to get these amendments on. So I was doing them a favor. I said, well, let's just go to energy. Having a tough day.
Whoops. At least it's not just me.
This is the governor's bill, Madam Chair, and so I will respect your opinion on this. I'm reluctant to take this out because it is the governor's bill. It's not my bill. And
where does it go next?
It would go to probably taxes. Would go to taxes. And I understand that you need to work, or you'd want some comfort.
We need to work on that definition.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, can I withdraw the A1 amendment then? We can just leave.
Can you what?
Withdraw the A1 amendment, although we passed it on.
Take care of it.
Well, that's not my objection.
No, but what is that?
Okay, that's an option.
We have to reconsider it then.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so Senator Rosen recommend or moves that we reconsider the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. So which you can just withdraw it now.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'd like to withdraw the A1 amendment then.
Okay. Any discussion on the rest of the bill? Senator Rosen moves that Senate File 1062 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to taxes. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. And
you,
we do need to get to the floor. We will have a meeting on Tuesday. This brings us to the end of our first deadline bills. Meeting adjourned.